Hello out there in the crowd. Could everybody take a seat and those who are here for the last committee meeting leave quietly there, please? Okay, looks like we got enough to start out here. Call a meeting to order and start out with a roll call.
Cornish.
Here.
Mullery.
Here.
Gothier.
Here.
Grunhagen. Hilty.
Yo.
Johnson.
You don't want to sit next
Kiefer.
Here.
Creasel.
Here.
Leidiger.
Here.
Mariani. McDonald.
Hi.
Moran. Nornis.
Here.
Slocum.
Present.
Smith.
Here.
Okay, entertain a motion to approve the minutes from March 1st. Okay, Representative Moran moves to approve the minutes of March 1st. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, minutes approved. Okay, members, today we're going to start out with the bill by Representative Kiefer, House File 532, followed after that by a continuation of a Department of Public Safety presentation on the budget. Representative Kiefer, are you ready to present your bill, and would you like to move it?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. For the record, I'm Andrea Kiefer. I'd like to present House File 532 and ask that it be approved and re-referred to the Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee. The purpose of Bill 532 is it enhances the penalty for individuals who receive a repeat conviction for fifth-degree criminal sexual conduct from a gross misdemeanor to a felony status. This is one of the only penalties for CSC conduct that is not enhanced by a repeat conviction. By enhancing the penalties for this type of crime and conviction could have long-term impacts on preventing future and potentially more serious assaults. I would like to now acknowledge and thank my co-authors on this bill, Representatives Slocum, Hilty, Gothier, Smith, and Chair Cornish. I'd also like to point out that we have endorsements, and they should be in your packet. There's a letter of endorsement from the Minnesota County Attorneys Association and Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Now, Chair, I would like to introduce a testifier, Erin Keister. She's the Assistant County Attorney of Goodhue County and Mincasa Public Policy Committee co-chair. She would be happy to explain the bill in more detail and answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Representative Kiefer. Ma'am, go ahead and state your name and title and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee members, representatives. It is a great honor for me to appear in front of you in support of House Bill 532. My name is Erin Keister, and I'm an assistant county attorney in Goodhue County. Goodhue County is located in southeastern Minnesota with Red Wing as its county seat. I have, apparently, I'm not being able to be heard, which is not a common experience for a prosecutor. I have been prosecuting sexual offenses committed against children as well as adults in Goodhue County since 1999. And in my job as a prosecutor, I'm very familiar with the criminal sexual conduct statutes. In each of the existing criminal sexual conduct statutes, if an individual is charged with and committed and convicted of an offense and then is charged and convicted a second or subsequent time, the penalty increases. It just makes common sense. That's with the exception of criminal sexual conduct in the fifth degree. And I realize that criminal sexual conduct in the fifth degree as the least significant acts defined under Minnesota law that are prohibited resulting in sexual acts towards another tends to get overlooked. And I'm here today to ask us to take a hard look at it this morning, mostly because it's an offense that repeats itself over and over and over again. In this culture where we are saying repeat sex offenders cause damage to the community, to its victims, this is one of the offenses that we do not react to. Throughout the state of Minnesota, prosecutors have joined together and have found that this is one of the existing loopholes under current Minnesota law, where it allows individuals to repeatedly violate other individually sexually, and the penalty does not change. And these types of acts that would be criminal under this statute are not the common, you know, brushes against the bar. This is intentional, unwanted violations of a sexual nature. These are serious natures. It's their hard convictions to obtain. And certainly when an individual is convicted and does it a second time, prosecutors really want to have the tools and options so that we can intervene effectively. Most importantly, so we have an option for long-term supervision, for treatment, and possible long-term supervision to prevent additional sexual crimes. I would respectfully request that you support and pass this bill so that prosecutors can have the option to work hard in sexual violence in not only in Goodhue County, but in communities throughout the state of Minnesota. Thank you so much. It's an honor and privilege to be before all of you today, and I would be more than willing to answer any questions that any of you have regarding this bill.
Members, questions? Well, if there are no questions, I haven't got any, so. Representative Kiefer, would you like to restate your motion?
Yes, I would, Chair. I'd like to.
Opponents. I'm sorry. Opponents. Any opponents in the crowd here? Okay, Representative Kiefer. Thank you very much for the presentation of your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Aaron. And yes, I would like to reinstate the motion to move and approve and re-refer House File 532 to the Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee.
Okay, Representative Kiefer, renews their motion. House File 532 be recommended to pass.
Mr. Chair?
And go to, yes.
Do we have a in the past, this has had serious fiscal notes, and so I'm
I'll let Mr.
trying
Carter
to figure out how do we pass a bill that's got a fiscal note all the time in the past and couldn't get funded. Now we...
Well, we aren't passing anything yet, but Representative Mullery, we it's a preliminary fiscal note. And Mr. Carter can cover it.
Mr. Chair, committee members, there is a preliminary fiscal note on this bill. We had a due date of today, but only one agency has completed their part of the fiscal note. But that sentencing guidelines and their impact is 5 prison beds. And then corrections, when they complete their section, will put in the numbers for those 5 beds.
So then, Mr. Chair, just to understand this, you're going to send it to another committee, but if it gets passed to go to the floor, you have to include that in your budget then? Is that whatever the final fiscal note is?
Yes, Representative Mueller, we've discussed this probably 4 times now in this committee, that if we get a preliminary fiscal note and not a final, that we can move it to the judiciary, and if we need to, we can do a number of anything, discuss a fiscal note there, bring it back here. But we're not going to hold it over here just based on a preliminary fiscal note. So. But we have lots of options left if the fiscal note is too large and we don't want to address it, or whatever our choices are.
Well, I guess maybe it's hard for us to understand because the chair of the last Finance Committee in Ways and Means said that hadn't been done that way in the past, that the initial committee had to look at it. But I don't know what is going on under the new regime.
New rules. All right. Any other questions? If not, the motion was by Representative Kiefer to recommend to pass House File 532 and move it to the Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you very much for your bill.
Thank you.
Okay, Department of Public Safety, a continuation, and Commissioner Ellison.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. What we thought we would do today is go through the slides for the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and I think there were questions. You mentioned yesterday that there would be questions in this area, so I'll go through the slides, and then we'll go from there. The Bureau of Criminal Apprehension budget pages are located on pages 41 through 59 of your budget book. Their mission is to protect Minnesotans and all who visit our state by providing services to prevent and solve crimes in partnership with law enforcement, public safety, and other criminal justice agencies. The BCA services in the investigative area include special agents and analysis, predatory offender registration and investigation program, financial crimes task force, cold case assistance, internet crimes against children, investigation, and the Minnesota Joint Analysis Center. The BCA administrative services include the criminal justice law enforcement training and education program, the Amber Alert programming, missing and unidentified persons, the Minnesota Crime Alert Network, the DARE program, Minnesota Crime Watch program, statewide internet safety education program, and the Minnesota Duty Officer program. The BCA forensic services include forensic science, drug laboratory, nuclear and mitochondrial DNA laboratory, the firearms laboratory, National Integrated Ballistics Identification Network, the Midwest Automated Fingerprint Identification Network, the Fingerprint Laboratory, Documents Laboratory, Combined DNA Indexing System, Breath Alcohol Testing Laboratory, Toxicology Laboratory, Trace Laboratory, Crime Scene Service, Training and Accreditation. You can see that CSI has nothing on the BCA in terms of the services that we provide. The Minnesota Justice Information Services Program includes CRIMNET, the Criminal Justice Data Communications Network, criminal history background checks, criminal justice reporting system, maintenance and administration of criminal justice information systems throughout the state, development services for systems that are required, fingerprint services, technical support, training, and auditing. The BCA funding proposal for the 12-13 biennium includes $85 million from all funds. Of that $85 million, $81,078,000 is from the general fund. From the trunk highway fund is $3,882,000, and state government special revenue is $14,000. With that, we will go to your questions.
Members. Kind of a quiet one.
Mr. Chair, we're glad to hear that the committee is ready to endorse the budget proposal. No.
All right. I haven't got any questions. You folks don't? Yeah, Representative Grunhagen.
I get emails from time, or thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Ellison. Is it Ellington?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, it's Ellison.
Ellison, okay. From parents whose children are being bullied on the internet. Okay, I noticed you, internet crimes against children. This must be a pretty common situation that comes up with the bullying. Is there any consequence to that, or what does the parent do whose child is experiencing that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, the program that I mentioned is an internet safety program around sexual abuse and making sure that parents understand how to protect their children from internet crimes against children. So it would not necessarily include bullying. There are several programs that address bullying and give suggestions for what parents can do. Those programs usually are offered through the Minnesota Department of Education.
Okay, thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I have worked several years with the DARE program in my local community, and I found it to be a useful program myself in communicating with the students and the teachers. However, I have heard that perhaps it's not as effective a program, and I just wanted to get your professional take on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the program in and of itself has been demonstrated to not have the sort of preventive results than what was first thought. However, the DARE program, since those research findings have come forth, has modified its approach. And the DARE, and again, the DARE program in and of itself, if you just do the DARE program and don't remind children as they're going through their education and becoming teenagers and adults, if you don't reinforce the messages that are in the DARE program, then it certainly isn't effective. But the research has shown if DARE is part of a larger comprehensive program of drug abuse and gang behavior prevention, then it does become more and more effective. The other thing that we feel about DARE is that it's a wonderful community policing strategy. It's a great program to expose elementary and eighth and ninth grade students to police officers and begin a good, positive, solid relationship between children and police officers. So we feel, though, that is a good benefit of the program.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, so more so than feelings, you have statistics to back that up as well, really, that it's working.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, yes, there are studies that have been done, again, that show that DARE in and of itself doesn't have the drug abuse prevention aspects that they were first thought to have. But if you reinforce the messages throughout the education of the children, both in the community and with parents and in the schools, then that is much more effective.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Commissioner, then what, just curious, you mentioned that you've enhanced the programs. How was that accomplished?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, yes. Several years ago when the studies were released about the DARE programming in and of itself having less effectiveness, the DARE program itself enhanced the program, and other drug abuse prevention people have come forward and offered what I suggested, in that if you just do that in and of itself, not as effective, but if you combine that with other efforts, it becomes more effective. So I think it's now, after several years since those initial studies were released, I think it's pretty well known, at least among drug abuse prevention people in the schools, that you need to pair it with other messages over time.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, then just in closing, I want to commend you on the program. I was always encouraged by the program and heard good things, at least in my community in rural Minnesota. So I'm encouraged to hear that the successes of it, and that it's going to be continued part of a program and continue to have some successes. And I thank you for that.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Ellison, I have a question on our Metro Task Force. On the OJP gives roughly $2.9 million there in what appears to be just coordination efforts. Can you explain how those dollars are used and what we're actually doing there?
Yes, I'm going to ask Director Boulbert to come forward. She can probably give you more details than I can. But basically, the $2.9 million is used to reimburse local units of government who provide law enforcement officers to work in a multi-jurisdictional fashion. So the funding largely reimburses those local units of government to a certain percentage of that officer's time. Ms. Boulbert, would you like to provide further clarification?
Welcome. We were discussing calling you up anyway, so you brought your book along with you. So if you could answer Representative Kelly's question, it'd be great. And state your name and title.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is, for the record, Jerry Boulbert. I'm the Director of the Office of Justice Programs. I think Director Commissioner Ellison's explanation of how the funds are allocated is fair. I think we have about 24 task forces around the state, and they do reimburse local multi-jurisdictional units for a variety of expenditures that they incur while they do multi-jurisdictional work.
Mr. Chair. Representative Kelly.
So if I have this correct, we're paying them an additional $2.9 million to coordinate with each other in a job that they do on a daily basis.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Bovier.
Representative, what this allows them to do is coordinate larger multi-jurisdictional efforts to track crime that goes across jurisdictional boundaries. So it'll pay for additional confidential funds, for an example, or additional equipment that one department cannot afford to buy. So it enhances their already existing efforts.
Representative Kelly?
Nothing at this time, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Director Boulbert, Office of Justice programs overall, what would you say the percentage is of those programs that historically are a renewal of an old fund? In other words, depend on it for their operating budget, and how many are funded on their own and use the money that we give them for new projects or something that isn't just a regular, you know, operating revenue?
Mr. Chair, the Crime Victims Services Fund has been established and operational for about 6 years, and that has been a renewal fund. The intention was to ensure access to services around the state. So that has been a renewal process, although we have been looking at trying to develop a competitive grant application process. The rest of our grant applications are competitive. The other one that has the kind of longevity that Crime Victims has is the multi-jurisdictional task forces. But they were originally funded with federal funds. They have been funded with state funds predominantly since 2006.
I know it's a hard question for you to ask or answer, but what do you think the wisdom is between deciding how we should distribute the funds of these places, whether they should be a regular line item in our budget every year and we decide on their worth, or is there an advantage? The problem with some of the public and the legislators see is using the grant program for an official operating year after year instead of really a grant. You know, it gets a little fuzzy on the proper use of the state money, whether it should be a continuation of an operating budget or a grant for a new innovative ideas.
Mr. Chair, you have clearly explained the dilemma that we have been grappling with for several years. Some of these initiatives would not exist without the ongoing support of the state. And for those who are getting those funds, obviously they would argue vociferously to maintain the current system. For other jurisdictions or other activities, folks who are not being funded, there obviously the other argument is that there should be an ongoing competitive process for new and exciting innovations. So there are two schools of thought, and it really is difficult to determine which is the better approach.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for Representative Mullery?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess you said multi-jurisdictional task forces, and I can think of different. Now, what do you, does that include things like the interstate compacts, or is that through OGP, that funding, or I thought that was actually connection more to corrections, but that type of thing, or are you talking about working with local police forces working with each other, or just what are we talking? I mean, it seems like that phrase could include a lot of different, very different things here.
Director?
Mr. Chair, Representative, these particular multi-jurisdictional entities are law enforcement entities, state, federal, and local law enforcement agencies who conduct threat assessments each year to determine where the biggest issues are in their communities and address the violent crime in those communities. The Interstate Compact is with the Department of Corrections.
A couple of questions for maybe both of you. Help me, sound like Representative Wagenia, she always says, help me understand this. Help me understand this when I'm thinking about you folks get cuts to your budget. What's your process in how it trickles down from the top? In other words, you've probably been asked this before. Would you rather have a cut overall to your agency of a certain percent and you go in and decide where it is, or do you like us to go to a light item, especially in the Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs? Once you answer that basic question, then what's your process? How does your team work at? You talk with each division, get them in, things like that. If you could,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in terms of our preference, the fact is that each one of the programs that we fund was decided upon by a previous legislative body, and so they directed us to provide funds for certain purpose areas and included that in their appropriations language and in the statute books.
So we don't feel that it's appropriate for us to decide, unless we're directed to, which program should remain and which program shouldn't. We really feel that that appropriately, the governor proposed the budget. We obviously support the governor's budget. And now if the legislature disagrees with that, then, you know, we will honor the ultimate agreement that is reached and do that in the fairest, most judicious manner that we can. So in answer to your first question, we feel that it's most appropriate for the legislature to provide us direction based on their understanding of the programs. The second thing is what we've done in the past is we've taken the legislative directive and have implemented those cuts as best as we can given the legislative direction that we've been given. So, for instance, last year there were even some questions that Ms. Boisvert had, so she had to come back to the committee chair and say, okay, here's how I'm going to implement these cuts. I think that this is consistent with what you have directed us to do and gets agreement on that. So I hope that's responsive, and if Ms. Boisvert wants to add something.
Yeah. And then about the DARE situation, do you have on hand or ever had printed out, or could you furnish us any of the studies on the DARE program, both pro and con, if you could forward those to us?
Mr. Chair, we would be happy to do so.
Okay. But both that it's working or not working or both sides of the issue, if you have those available, it'd be great. And Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mulroy, for asking another question, because now, as I asked the question on this $2.9 million that we do transfer down from OJP down to the task forces, it's just not clear to me, and maybe help me understand, Mr. Chair, if the task forces have a budget and they're doing what they need to do, I assume that budget would include the collaborative efforts that they need to do across jurisdictional issues and things. But so what is this $2.9 million actually in addition to? What are we helping the task forces do that they're not supposed to be doing within their own budget?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this augments funds to do cross-jurisdictional cases. Oftentimes it's additional equipment that local jurisdictions may not have, but if they were able to buy it together, it works for them to work across the multi-jurisdictional efforts. I can give you all the budget. We fund very few salaries in this. We fund predominantly equipment costs, overtime costs for special details. Again, confidential funds is a large amount of the funding as well. And I can certainly give you a very specific breakdown of that. And it allows them to look at crime not only in their local jurisdictions, but across the entity, the multi-jurisdictional entity that forms.
Mr. Chair and
Representative Kelly.
Director Rivera, I wouldn't mind seeing that if you could get that to me. Thank you.
You're happy to do so.
Commissioner, in your building, what space is unoccupied right now, or do you have any? If you do, what is this plan for that space? Well, how are you set for square feet and occupied or unoccupied?
Mr. Chair, committee members, the building that we primarily occupy is leased. We don't own a building, and so we don't have unused space within that building. If you're talking about
BCA,
the
excuse me.
Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, let me ask Superintendent Virga about that, because I'm not exactly sure.
Superintendent, would you like to come down? And
good morning, sir.
Good morning. You could state your name and title and then talk about the space in your building, whether you're underspaced, overspaced, and what you plan to do with it.
My name is Dave Bierga, and I'm the acting superintendent for the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. In regards to the building at 1430 Maryland, we don't have any unused space. We did a reorganization of the work cubes within the last 4 years to create some more space. We've had some storage issues. We've opened up some storage space. And as far as unused, I can't think of any area that's unused other than an unfinished portion, which was going to be a firearms range underneath the street, underneath Maryland. That has not been finished or been able to be used. So that's the unused portion. As far as the future, I do know that MNJAC, which is a part of the BCA, the Minnesota Joint Analysis Center, They're going to be needing to move from their FBI location within the next couple of years because the FBI is building a new building in the northern suburbs. And so they're looking for a home. And as far as future considerations, if there were a way for us to consolidate our workspaces even more, we would probably look to bring MNJAC underneath the BCA building there.
Okay. Well, that satisfies me. Okay, thank you, Superintendent. Unless there's other questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Question for Ms. Bouvier.
I'm sorry.
Chairman, Ms. Bouvet, your office oversees the activity dealing with emergency shelter services for victims of domestic violence. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, sure. That's correct.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Bouvet, I think in 05 I saw a written report that your office did detailing the 27 shelters and the 31 hotel-motel programs. Listing the average occupancy rate, which I think at that time was 85% occupied, 15% empty, and it even was as detailed as listing the names of the emergency shelters and the salaries of the directors, the employment benefit packages. Has that report been updated in writing?
The director?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, it has. I'd be happy to provide it to you.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Bouvet, what's the most recent date of the update?
Director?
January 2011.
Mr. Chairman, I request a copy of that. Thank you.
So noted, Representative Smith. Thank you. And thank you, Director. Representative Mullery had a question.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to make a comment. I was surprised that you weren't going to protect the firing range.
Well, I was thinking along those lines at the same time you were. We'll find some way to gold plate that baby. Well, Commissioner, thank you very much. And then let's see, we have two notices here. Where's the one from the page? We have some ninth grade students from St. Louis Park High School visiting the committee today. If they could stand up and wave. Thank you for being here. Okay, Commissioner, thank you much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Sorry we didn't get Mr. Dolish and crew up there. I see a bunch of other people. I know you'd rather be grilled than just sit here, but. And, all right, members, in case I didn't answer the questions about the fiscal notes enough, we've got so many options for fiscal notes. Representative Smith is very aware of the impact of anything we do on the courts, and I don't think he's going to let anything go that he believes it's a substantial fiscal note to affect them. And so we could either hold it over there, we can send it back here and hold it. I just don't like holding bills in our committee and sitting on them with our time limits coming soon when we could progress them and bring them back just as easily. Otherwise, we hold them here, and then we still got to go to Representative Smith's committee. And so our options are we can hold them here, we can move them to Smith's committee, we can bring them back, we can completely ignore the fiscal note altogether and ask the agencies to absorb it, or we can send it to the House floor without looking at it and end up an hour's debate with a question being sent back here. But naturally, we'd like to do it the right way. So if any of that question ever comes up again, the policy is here is if I can, I'll move it to Smith's committee, Representative Smith, and bring it back. But neither one of us are brazen enough to get a 50-bed impact and just send it to the floor without addressing it. So sooner or later it'll be addressed and the money will be found or absorbed or we'll come to some resolution. Maybe not always to your satisfaction, but we'll talk about it together and hash it out. So, okay. Any no comments? The meeting is adjourned.